Delightful to be here. I also found this a very difficult assignment. Partly because memory is not really one of my strongest areas, and I've been around a long time. And I found that as I was kind of trying to dredge up these memories, I was conflating memories and adding things and making them much more decorated than they needed to be. So I just decided to go with that. I'm going to go with my conflation of memories. I have to say that I also am not terribly interested in the avant-garde, and I don't know where it is. I don't know where to look for it. I certainly don't know where to look for it in San Francisco. I think when I came here from New York, I was, you know, a typical New York snob, and I thought that San Francisco was sort of a toy town, very pretty and clean and sunny, and that the New York Times wasn't going to review anything I did, so it didn't matter what I did, which was turned out to be very liberating for me. I should say that all of my what I finally ended up wanting to think about, which wasn't so much the avant-garde, but those moments of transformation, those moments of vibration, of a kind of physical response to something, those have been very few for me, and I can list them all on one hand, and I thought I would talk about a couple of them, and that will ultimately lead to the San Francisco one, because the first couple are not in San Francisco. The first is when I was a freshman in college in Virginia, and I had been raised in the South, and was in Richmond, Virginia, very segregated at that time, if not still. And a woman, I was brought by my modern dance teacher to see a woman dance, or to see a company, I guess, dance. I don't remember the company particularly. I just remember this one woman in a white dress, a very black woman, a very dark black woman with her hair unstraightened and very close cropped to the head and very large flat feet, dancing this kind of slave, mournful, sorrowful dance. It was Judith Jameson dancing a very famous piece called Cry. But in that very white audience with all the ladies with blue hair at the Virginia Museum Theater, it was really transformative. It was so unlike anything I'd ever seen. It was so completely felt. She was unaware of the effect she was having, or if she was having one. She was immersed in something that was very real and present for her, and I felt completely immersed in it as well, although it wasn't obviously my experience. And that was huge for me and changed the way I thought about art. Before that, I thought dancing, and I'm a choreographer, I thought dancing was about, you know, dancing for grandma and doing your backflips and your splits and twirling your fire baton. I didn't know that it could embody history and meaning and culture. So that was huge for me. The second was in New York. So that was in the 60s, 69 probably. The second one was in the 70s in New York. And it was at West Beth Studios, and it was a Merce Cunningham event, he did these collisions between artists of different kinds. And this particular, I don't remember who the scenic artist was. It wasn't Rauschenberg. It was someone I don't remember. And I just remember the lights turning on and off a lot. And the dancers were dancing phrases that were being determined by something, who knows what. And there was a woman standing on like a milk crate, very cross-eyed, small little woman, who was sweating. And she was making these high, shrill, frightening sounds, and it was Meredith Monk. And I had never heard of her before or seen her before. And at first, I was just, it was so abrasive. I thought, oh, what is she up to? But eventually, again, that kind of embodied, trance-like experience that she was having, the experience was so truthful for her that I kind of came around to the experience and went somewhere really amazing with the whole event. And the third brings us to San Francisco, and it was the 80s. Now, there may be those of you in the room who know all the people I'm going to talk about and will say, oh, you've got it all wrong, and that's entirely possible. I'll cop to that right away. I met Margaret Jenkins when I got here, and she introduced me to Michael Palmer, the poet that she worked with and still works with. And Michael, and as I said, I was kind of a snob about San Francisco. I wasn't that interested in the dancing. I wasn't that interested in the things that I was seeing. But he introduced me to something called language poetry, which I knew nothing about. And I thought, just by virtue of the fact that I know nothing about this, it's kind of interesting. So I started going to poetry readings. I saw Michael Palmer. I saw Aaron Shuren, who became a friend of mine, Steve Benson, Carla Harriman. And then one night I was south of Market in this little venue, a little tiny venue, I want to say Natoma Street. It was actually somebody's loft. And mostly what happened there were kind of S&M, Leatherman kind of events.
It was
people
Ricky's.
Getting things happening to them.
Was it Clementina?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't remember. And so it had that kind of ambiance. It had that kind of vibe to it, like this is an S&M vibe. And here was this poetry reading happening in there. And I went in and sitting in the room, and this very petite and almost prim little lady, very, very pretty, got up to the podium. And she read her work. This particular poem was something about a school bus. And there was something erotic about it, I don't remember. And I finally got language poetry in that moment. I understood that there, it wasn't so much about the continuation of meaning, but the way that these juxtapositions of words kind of pushed against each other to create a really wonderful space that you could drift off into. I finally got it. It took me many, many readings before I finally got it. And her name was Leslie Scalapino. And today I Googled her and found that she died in 2010. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wasn't aware of that. So it's a little bit of a memorial to her. I then went out and bought that poem and followed her work and tried to see her whenever I could and became a little bit of a fan. I thought about reading that poem, and I thought, you know, I don't read that poem because it was such an important one for me. It gave me permission in my own work. I use a lot of language in my own work to use a kind of language that's ventilated, that occurs in the moment and isn't necessarily trying to arc meaning. It was a big turning point for me in my own work. So I don't like to read that poem because I'm afraid it won't be what I think it is. It won't live up to its transformative power. But I thought I would read another one because I think she's so wonderful. I'll just read part of it, and then I will stop. I'm not even sure what the name of this is. I've deleted that part from my script here. Attending a funeral, it's contemporary in time, not being in itself depressed, taking a ridiculous aspect, birds that sing loudly in the chapel where the funeral service is being held. The birds are mechanical, so it's being creamed. Like in the earlier episode of Playing Ball, our being creamed in the foreground of the field by the other girls. A microcosm, but it's of sailors. Though I'm given attention standing in pictures with one or two of the men, they've come into a port at one time. I'm immature in age. It doesn't occur for that reason, but is inverted. The sailors flirted with girls, which is contemporary in time, therefore, and being mechanical, since I'm interested in the sailors, then merely interested. A boy who was actually at the funeral, so it's inverted, was later playing ball, really occurring. Inverted also because of being at the funeral, mechanical birds part of it, so it isn't creamed in the future, not because of that. The boy who was actually at the funeral corresponds to work as a chimney sweep, which I had for a short time, is inverted. I didn't take the job seriously since it was in the past. I was supposed to do it a while, was contemporary, so it's related to the boy. I got sick from the soot, so my leaving after work only 2 days stemmed from that. Someone else driving, the funeral having taken place, is getting speeding tickets with us in the car. We're older than he, so we don't say anything because we're older. Not about the police stopping him. The drive is several hundred miles at night, which is like him later going below the border. Him not being sentient, a man whoring. It's from the standpoint of a girl. Is a situation of trying to finance going below the border to whore and staying down there as long as he can before having to return to get some job. It's a microcosm, is also inverted, not retroactive. Ah, it's from That They Were at the Beach by Leslie Scalapino.
Thank you, Joe.